The Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew, into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
Good morning, my brewing brothers and sisters. Welcome to the show. Today we're talking about robust porters.
Sounds good.
Yeah. You look a little under the weather, John.
Hey, man. I'm sick.
Yeah?
Kicked my ass this weekend.
How you went to the beer fest, the Boonville...
I went to Boonville, drank no beer, and I drank a lot of NyQuil.
There's more alcohol in NyQuil than there is in beer.
I'll tell you what. I was buzzed with NyQuil. Two tablespoons of that will put you under.
Yeah, if only NyQuil came in like flavors like Robust Porter NyQuil and NyQuil Barley Wine and NyQuil Stout and NyQuil Pale Ale. I think we got an idea there.
If you drink enough NyQuil, you will trip.
Really?
It has like, or maybe it's just Robitussin.
Yeah,
the Tussin. All right.
Because it has... LME or DME or one of those things in there.
Yeah, it's got malt extract in it. That's what they make Robitussin from.
And if it's the same thing that they put basically in acid, but in tiny little amounts.
Nice.
And if you drink enough of it, you'll see little floating mushrooms.
I should have done that.
There you go.
Put a shot in the pint. That'd been great.
Yeah, Tussin and NyQuil.
All right.
Good mix. All right. So, but you had
All right. It was a good trip.
Yeah.
I think Justin had a better time than I did. I mean, when you're sick, you're just miserable, in the heat.
Right.
And you can't talk to people, and you're low energy. But the event was great. A lot of people there. I think there's double the amount because of rain last year.
Mm.
I don't know. It was beautiful scenery.
I can never go because it's the weekend of my wedding anniversary, so I never can go.
Well, you can get remarried.
Yeah, you can always get married again. There's that. But that, I wanted to talk about one thing today before we get started is the recipes that we give out and competitions and things. A lot of people listening to the show, they know that you and I do really well in competitions, and they want some advice on competitions, and they want recipes that are winning recipes. And the recipes that we give out are award-winning recipes. They've won plenty of awards before. And, this year with the NHC, I got a bunch of email from people saying, hey, I brewed your Scottish ales, I brewed your English ales, I brewed this, I brewed that, I brewed this from the show, and I, placed for the very first time in the Nationals. It's fantastic. Thank you so much.
That's great.
And that's great. We're happy to do it, and that's wonderful. But one of the things you got to realize is that the brewer is a big part of this.
For sure.
Okay, so we can give these recipes out, and you can have the same ingredients and, the same equipment. But, there's a number of people out there. They'll brew these, and they won't win, and they're going to wonder what's going on. Mm-hmm. And that's where the brewer comes in. You got to manage your fermentation. You've got to watch, sanitation. You've got to, healthy yeast. Fermentation is everything here. And the brewer and the processes of the brewer, and measuring things and, paying attention to what's going on with your beer, very important. And that's a big difference. Everybody can have the same recipe, mm-hmm. but... the beers turn out different. Why? The brewer. The brewer is key. And so if you've won with these recipes and this advice, that's fantastic. And, give yourself a pat on the back for being, an attentive brewer who's doing the right things, who's learning about all the things you need to do to brew good beer. It's not extremely complex, but, a lot of people don't pay attention to those fine details. So, if you're doing well, that's great. You take a lot of that credit for yourself. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily just the recipe.
And if you learn something that people don't know, share that with others. It'll help them make better beer, in the long run.
Exactly.
I just swallowed a frog, by the way. So
well, before the show, we were talking about how Quaff does really well in the national competition for the Club of the Year. And
you're doing pretty well this year, I hear.
We're doing okay. The reason Quaff does so well, I was explaining to John, is that the attitude at Quaff is any piece of information you get, you share with other brewers.
Right.
And it's not just in the club, outside the club too. So, the attitude that's been instilled in me is if you know something about brewing that will help somebody else, somebody has some questions or wants to know how you did something, how you were able to make this award-winning beer, you tell them. You tell them everything that you know. You offer to help them. You do whatever it takes to help them make better beer.
Well, they still have to apply it too, so you leave it up to them.
Right. Right. They have to apply it, but the attitude is help everyone make better beer. And if you do that, then everybody gets to drink better beer.
Right.
And each year we get some people say, how is it? You were asking me, how does Doe's beat Quaff in the in the club competition? It's like, I was telling you, you got to do this, you got to do that. You need more,
maybe a couple years
more
from
people
now.
Brewing. Yeah, mm-hmm. And that'll be great. That'll be a wonderful time, because it's a real challenge, and it's not easy, and it takes a lot of hard work. But sharing that information is a great thing. So. Nice to see that.
Spread the love.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what we're doing here with these brewcasts. All right. So Robust Porter. Porter started, back in England, back in the day, it was the big, big-time beer and one of the first mass-produced commercial beers. And I'm not going to dwell on, the history of Porter and, where it came from, the three threads, the porters, all that. But I want to focus more, and the reason is because I believe Porter has really become more of an American style now.
Why is that?
Well, Porter pretty much died out in England and was kind of resurrected here in the United States. And like we tend to do here, especially on the West Coast, is make things a little bigger, make them hoppier, make them, a bolder statement. And I think that's really become true as far as Robust Porter goes. Right. And maybe some people will poo-poo that and think I'm crazy. But I said poo-poo.
We have a hop fix, so we're all about big over here on the West Coast. So.
Exactly. You need more malt to balance that and, all the things that go along with it. It's a love of life. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And if you have any of the porters that have come back in England and started being rebrewed in England, they tend to be a little smaller and not as roasty and not as hoppy. If you're into porters, you've probably tried. There's a number of good ones that you can get commercially, and Anchor Porter is pretty common. A lot of people try that. Sierra Nevada's Porter, Bell's. Deschutes is one that I really like a lot. And if you've tried several of them, you'll realize there is kind of a range in there. Mm-hmm. Again, like most of the styles that we talk about, there's a range. And some of them are more hoppy, drier. Some of them are more malty. Some of them are less hoppy, more balanced. My favorite is the Deschutes because I think it has a lot of balance to it. Interesting thing in the latest Zymergy, they were doing their commercial calibration thing, and they list it as a brown porter, and it's not a brown porter.
Well,
I'm like, well, it's not a brown porter; it's a robust porter. And then I went to the style guide to think, well, maybe I'm just clueless on this. And sure enough, it's listed under robust porter, so I think there was a little mistake in
there.
But it is. I don't think it's anything like a brown porter, but it in the realm of robust porters, I'd say it's starting to head towards that end.
Nice.
So it's not as strong and harsh as some of the robust porters can be.
Well, there's a discrepancy then in robust porter then with the appearance. They say it's medium brown to very dark brown, and then they go, well, the ruby garnet highlights. But it can be black. So what is it supposed to be?
Good question.
I mean, that's so open.
Well, and again, I don't think some of these aspects of style are not quite so critical. Hmm. I tend to like them into the black range because you want to get enough of that roasty character in there to kind of give it that taste. And it generally ends up with a pretty dark beer. Hmm. You know, it's black, but not so black that you can't see through it. It ends up that you get like a, if you hold it up to a strong light, you see, you know, these reddish hues coming through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's kind of appropriate. But, you know, if it's a little lighter in color, a little darker, that's okay.
Okay.
But I think most of the examples you're going to see now are pretty dark, towards the darker end of the spectrum.
Well, doesn't even the glass, that plays a role into how it looks. Like,
if you
were to serve in the goblet, you know, you could have a brown, but it would look black. You know?
Right. That's true. How dense the liquid is going to make a difference as well. And the flavor is going to be... you know, it's going to have a pretty good malt flavor, and it's going to have a coffee, chocolate flavor to it. But one of the important things, I think, is, you know, it's different than that roastiness you get in a stout. A lot of people, they put, like, roast barley in there, which is really good for like a dry stout, but I wouldn't use that in a robust porter. I'd go with the Black Patent and you know some chocolate malt, and I think that'll give you more of an appropriate character to it. And like we're saying, you know, some of these finish drier, some of them are more tending towards a slightly sweeter. Mm-hmm. I like a balance. I like a little bit of sweetness in there because it makes those roast characters a little more rich and chocolate and coffee-like and fuller and not quite as bitter and dry.
I've talked to you about this recipe before, and you tend to like more chocolate in it, personally, like you said.
Yeah, and I've even done a mix of regular chocolate malt and a pale chocolate malt, which is about half the Lovibond of regular chocolate malt. So regular chocolate malt is going to run like 350, 400, and pale chocolate will be about 200 love.
Okay.
And it gives you an interesting blend of chocolatey, biscuity characters through there.
Hmm. What do you think about chocolate wheat?
Chocolate wheat. I have some. I haven't even tried it though.
I'm curious.
You know, seems like it will work just fine. Mm-hmm. One question from the chat room is Sierra Nevada. That is a robust porter, the Sierra Nevada porter. Hmm. And one place you can find all this information on these styles is the BJCP website, www.bjcp.org. Mm-hmm. And they have style guides. They have information on becoming a judge, running competitions, things like that. It's an excellent site and good source for information. And the style guide alone is great reading. It is very interesting in anytime you try a beer to try and match it up to the style guide and see where you think it fits.
Yeah, I would just print out the whole thing and read it.
Yeah, it's you know? Like I'm saying, it's a good reference piece put together by a lot of very smart people. On the flavor. You don't want your robust porter, you want those roasty things, but you don't want it to be burnt or harsh or, you know, some of the stouts can get more towards that. The bitterness will be, you know, can be fairly high, but, you know, again, I like it a little more balanced and, you know, not very estery. You know, it depends on the yeast you use, but I tend towards the California, at least. I like it clean. I like it, you know, the American version, like I was saying, of a robust porter.
I use British in mine, and it does have a cherry fruit character to it,
right? And that can be good, you know, if that's what
raisiny.
If that's what you like,
right?
You know, that's what you can do.
I've also noticed the longer you age it, the more the fruit character comes out.
Yeah, what happens is the alcohols will oxidize, and you know, you get some sherry notes, and you can get some of the higher alcohols. You know, will turn kind of fruity-ish. So that is one thing with age. That's why you age some of the bigger beers, and they take on those characters, and some of those harsher alcohol notes will mellow out over time. So, you know, it is a fairly broad style, and it's, you know, again, you have that range to move around, and it's just not as burnt and have that really strong... roast barley character that a stout has. So that's one of the big differences.
You were talking that you get a dry finish to it.
Well,
like a dry cocoa finish. almost from the chocolate malt. If you were to make a dry robust porter, do you get that at all in your recipe?
You know, you can. Again, I like mine a little more balanced and not quite so dry.
Okay.
You know, Deschutes is a kind of the way I shoot for it, that kind of style. I think the way to get that is, you know, the balance of, you know, bittering, roasting, you know, and residual sweetness.
There's a question from the chat. What about adding a lot of molasses?
You know, I wouldn't. You can, or treacle. You know, I think in certain types of beer that might go well, but in a robust port, I wouldn't do it. And again, you're free to do whatever you want. I think you'll end up with kind of a weird kind of, especially if you add too much character, just it muddies things up rather than making them clear. What I like to do on robust porter is I like to go with about 70 to 75% to, you know, a pale two row. If you want it more malty, go with like a crisp Maris Otter, or go with you know, some English pale malt. Or if you don't want quite that malt character, you can go with American two row. Work out nicely. A little less malty background. 9 to 10% Munich malt, light Munich, kind of brings out some of that character as well. 9% to 10% Crystal 40. You want a little bit of caramel crystal sweetness in the background, not overdone, but enough to help balance some of the roast that you're going to put in there. And about 3% Black Patent. Hmm. Now, you use the Black Patent and not the roasted barley. Black Patent is malted grain that is highly roasted. And then roasted barley is just barley. It's not malted. And there's a difference in the flavor, and one tends to be more acrid than the other. So some people say you can put some roasted barley in a robust porter, but I don't. And I think Ray Daniels in Designing Great Beers, he says, you know, no roasted barley either.
Yeah, I know Regan from More Beer, he always said the difference between those two is a stout and a porter is Black Patent and roasted barley.
Yeah.
You can't have both.
Right.
This is not a style, he would say.
Right, right.
He brews a great porter.
Well, and actually, this recipe originally... One more thing is chocolate malt between 4 to 5%. The origin of this recipe started out when I was first hanging around More Beer and starting to work with them. Was Chris and Regan... were helping me come up with a robust porter recipe. I asked Chris, and he said, well, let's ask Regan because he brews a lot of robust porters. And we started out coming up with this recipe, and I've tweaked it over the years, but it's pretty close to what he had originally. And I think he may have had carapils in there or something, a couple other things. And I really like the way this recipe has turned out over time.
Well, I brewed in. It's very good. It's yummy.
It turns out great. Mm-hmm. The chat room also wants to know mild ale malt or brown malt for something like this. You can do that and, you know, experiment with the different grains that you have, but if you replace a large portion of any of the malts with the mild ale malt or the brown malt especially will give you a very unique flavor that... You know, it may work out, it may not. I haven't tried in a robust porter, but...
Have you ever tasted brown malt before?
Yeah, I have.
It's yummy.
Yeah, and it depends on the amount.
Yeah. I mean, probably a small percentage, but I think it'd probably be good in a border.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In a border or a porter? A
border.
that's a porter with brown malt in it?
Beer with me here.
Beer with you?
Beer.
Absolutely. We'll beer with you.
I need a pint, man. Jeez.
You were supposed to bring in some of your robust porter, but...
Well, I'm selfish. I wanted to keep it for myself.
Apparently so. Well, and you placed in the first round of the Nationals with it, right?
Yeah, and it was your recipe.
So you need to send it in to the second round. Not that you win there, but that's all right. It's, give you some hope.
Appreciate your confidence, buddy.
John, sure. The chat room wants to know if it should be biscuity.
A slight edge, a hint of biscuitiness is good. You know, it's really good if you have it with chicken. You know, I like fried chicken with a good biscuity porter. Tends to bring out a lot of the flavor in your mouth. And as you know, chicken has a lot of moisture. And if you cook it properly on a barbecue and get it just right where it's really moist and the white in the center, chicken's really good. I like salt and pepper. So yes.
After the break, we'll talk about the hops and the yeast. We'll be right back. Say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman. Wow! I feel good. I knew that I would not. Now, back to the Jameel Show. I feel good. I knew that I would not. All right, we're back. We're talking about robust porters, how to brew a delicious robust porter, very similar to the Deschutes.
Yummy.
John's not feeling well. He's sick, but he's a trooper. He came in anyways to help spread the germs amongst the rest of us in the studio.
I hope I don't get you
just
sick.
Just trying to do me in so I can't brew more beer.
Exactly.
For competitions. Anyways, we were talking about the grain bill, and if you're doing a extract version of this, what you're going to need is a light malt extract, like the Alexander's, the Ultra Pale that various people sell, or the Breese version. And you're going to need some Munich malt extract, or you're going to need to do a partial mash. So some of the homebrew shops out there, they have recipes where they've got Munich malt and just having you steep it, and that just does not work. Munich malt needs to be converted. It's not a pre-converted malt. So you have to do a mini mash with Munich malt or get yourself some Munich malt extract, which they're selling nowadays, which is very good, and use that as your blend. For hops, there's a couple ways you can go. One is more towards a nod towards the English traditional, which would be the Kent Goldings, which I like to do mine that way, and go with a more subdued hopping. And you'll have a initial bittering charge around 60 minutes, and you might throw in you know, half to three quarters or 1 ounce at knockout at when you turn the flame off. If you want to go to a more Americanized version of this or West Coast version of this, Cascade, Centennial, Amarillo, all good choices. And you can, you know, get that citrusy, hoppy thing going. I wouldn't go too intense.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can have some hop aroma and flavor. And, you know, if you want really want to Americanize it even more. And some people like it that way. I wouldn't be too heavy-handed if you intend to do this for competition type entries.
Right.
I don't think it would do very well. Depends on the judges, but I don't think it would.
You'll still make beer.
Exactly. And yeah. If it's beer you like, you know, that's what it's all about. And you don't have to adhere to this rigid format. Although, you know, robust porter is pretty wide open. And if it's a good drinkable beer, that's all that matters. As far as mash temp, if you're going all grain, you're going to shoot for around 152 Fahrenheit, which is about 67 Celsius. So 152 to 154 Fahrenheit, 67, 68 Celsius is going to get you kind of a medium full mouthfeel on this. You don't want it to be thin, because when it's thin, the dryness tends to seem accentuated. Mm-hmm. So it tends to have some medium body to it. I do single infusion, you know, no step mashes or anything on this. Most beers I go single infusion. It works quite well. And for the yeast, I use California ale yeast most of the time. The White Labs WLP001 or the Y Yeast 1056. This is a good beer if you're brewing this using dry yeast, you can use the US 56. Is a good version of California ale yeast for this. It tends to be have a little bit of peach character, if you ask me. But in a beer such as this, where there's a lot of roast and a lot of other things going on, it helps to mask that, and it's not as big a deal, and turns out quite well. So US 56, the dry yeast, is a good choice for this, I think.
What about excuse me, an English yeast?
If you're doing an English yeast, a couple of things to keep in mind. One is you're going to have lower attenuation with an English yeast than you will with the California ale yeast, and you're going to get some more esters. So I would probably back down on the original gravity a little bit. If you're using the California ale yeast, you're shooting for around, the style guide is between 1048 to 1065. I tend to go towards the high end on this style and go 1062 to 1065 in there. If you're going to do English ale yeast, maybe back it down a few points, go, in the 1058 to 1064 or 1062 in there. Mm. With the English ale yeast, 1058 to 1062. And if you're doing the California ale yeast, maybe 62 to 64. So you'll end up with one that isn't too sweet with the English ale yeast, and not too estery.
You could use the dry Saffale 04, I think it is, for English.
Right. The Nottingham or the Windsor, or any of those are pretty good as well. Again, I don't think they're as good as the liquid yeasts, but I think they're pretty passable. And if you need to brew in a pinch and can't make a starter, or just can't get some of our friends in Australia, it's very difficult for them to get liquid yeasts, and they'll either have to maintain their own slants or they'll go with a dry yeast. Dry yeast is a good option, and there's some commercial pubs that use dry yeast as well. It's and winemakers use it all the time. Of course, the wine yeasts are different for that reason. And in the hopping, you're shooting for a bittering to gravity ratio of about 0.7 to 0.9. I tend to go towards the lower end of that again. I like some residual sweetness in there to make the roast seem less harsh and more chocolatey.
Well, you don't want astringency going through, right?
Right. There's some astringency in there, but again, it's balanced with a little bit of sweetness.
Right.
And it's an overall pleasant thing. It's like coffee, and you add a little sugar to it. It's that difference. You don't want it too sweet, but for my recipe, I'll shoot, 1064-ish, and I'll go with, 34 IBUs. And that turns out to 35 around there turns out to be a pretty good balance, and that might be a little less than 0.7. Hmm. And as far as the finishing alcohol goes, you're going to be around in that type of year, you're around 6%. The style guide says 4.8 to 6%, and I think in the American versions that you see floating around, they're all 5.5 and above. They tend to be, it seems. So maybe some of them are around 5.2, but they tend to be towards the higher end. Higher end in alcohol, higher end in hopping, higher end in everything overall, which makes for
a robust porter.
A robust, yeah. So yeah.
Good figure.
It kind of died out in England, and I think the last one brewed. I can't remember the story now. Sometime, in the 70s or something like that? Or pretty much it died out by the 70s. And then, like so many other styles that we're doing here,
homebrew brought it back.
Homebrew and commercial brewers, willing to do a lot of history and a lot of study and figure out, what's going on with those styles and bring them back and brew them and see what it's all about. Mm. Creativity and history.
I have to just chime in real quick and say that as much as I'm the not a session beer drinker, and I like to drink, 6 or 7 nice, healthy, hearty beers at a time, if I am just going to have, one pint of beer, I only have time for that, Robust Porter is definitely one of my favorites to have because, well, A, it's a little higher in the alcohol content, and that's a good thing. But it has so much kind of body and flavor and just so much going on that I don't want six of them. I really don't. I kind of just want a real nice pint of it and then leave it alone. It's definitely one of my favorite styles for that. Hmm. If I'm just going to pick up, you know, a one-off at the store one I've never tried, that's what I'll go for. It's nice. A Robust Porter. It's good stuff.
Hits the spot.
Yeah, it really does.
It's like two in one.
Yeah.
Nice.
That is all.
Yeah, Robust Porter is it's absolutely one of my favorites as well. And let me also mention, if you're listening, you can hit the chat now button on the website and join the other listeners in the chat room and ask questions that way, or call us up 1-888-401-BEER and ask your questions on the air. Yeah, Robust Porter is one of my favorites, and one of the things that I brew very consistently, very well over the years, and it has become the base for a lot of other beers that I do. So,
In what way?
Well, I have a smoked porter, like the Alaskan, right? And I actually did well with that. I in the Nationals in the second round, the final round, I placed it. And you know who was the judges for that? Ray Daniels.
Wow.
Jeff Larson, who's Alaskan Brewing.
Right.
And, you know, they wrote the book on smoked beers. And also Harold Goodbranson, a good friend of mine down in San Diego.
Wow.
So those were the judges, and he's an excellent judge of smoked beers. So those were the judges for that, and I was really proud of that win. I think it was only second place or third place, but I treasure that one because Jeff Larson was in on it, and Ray Daniels was in on it, and Harold was in on it. And
it's a tough crowd.
Yeah, you know, if Jeff Larson says, yeah, the smoked porter is good enough to place, I mean, you know, look who's talking. So, yeah, that made me feel really good. So, yeah, you can do wood-aged. You could age a Robust Porter in a cask. It's big enough beer to withstand some aging, and if you want to bump it up a little bit into the maybe up to 70, you could do that and age it. It'll age out well. You could make fruit beer out of it, right?
Ooh,
so raspberries and Robust Porter.
What about NyQuil beer?
Right, you could make a NyQuil Robust Porter.
There you go.
Yeah, they are talking about adding raspberries or cherries and things like that in the chat room.
Be an excellent blend as well. Mm. Any fruit that has some tartness and some kind of bold character could be used. You couldn't do something like a peach. Robust Porter. Mm. You can do spice herb vegetable. I do chocolate hazelnut porter, which is that's something a lot of people brew. It's a very, very popular recipe, and a lot of people brew it.
What made you think of hazelnut for that one?
Well, the interesting thing is I'd seen a article in a – I went back and I bought every back issue of like Zymergy, every copy of Brewing Techniques, every copy of BYO, back to the first one. And I read through all of them. And at one point in like the early to mid-90s, there was a recipe in there for a chocolate hazelnut stout. I thought, oh, yeah, that sounds really good. And then I was at a homebrew shop in Stockton that's no longer there. And he had a kit for a chocolate hazelnut porter. And I was thinking, oh, you know, I just read about this. You know, let me give that a try. Give it a try, and it didn't turn out so good. And the problem was the Robust Porter part of it wasn't any good. Mm. And so I tweaked that over time and really got it dialed in where I liked it. And it turned out just fantastic. And it is the most requested recipe that I get is for that chocolate hazelnut porter. And everybody brews it, and people just love it. And you'd think, God, you know, that isn't the kind of beer I would drink, you know. It's chocolate hazelnut. Sounds like a foo-foo, fancy, I don't know. But with a good base Robust Porter, you know, it turns out really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's somewhat dessert-like, but, you know, it's a drinkable dessert-like. And that's really enjoyable.
Well, in the extract kit, you have a lot of steeping grains. I mean, it's
right,
like
the one that
more
beer sells. Yeah, it's a big kit. There's a lot of stuff in there.
Why? I mean, so much, like 2.5 pounds worth of steeping grains.
Well, it's like a half pound of cocoa powder and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know those guys hate having to make that kit up.
No,
but it's one of the best-selling kits, right?
Mm-hmm.
They sell a ton of those things.
I love your photo in the old catalog, too.
One laying down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hot.
Why, thank you.
Foo-foo beer. Jamil, yeah, the foo-foo fighter.
Me and my foo-foo beer.
Yeah.
But, you know, Robust Porter is very flexible that way, and so you can do all these different things. And you could do, you know, yeast things with it. I know some people have tried doing like a Brett thing with the Robust Porter.
It's soured a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and you can use other, you know, lactobacillus and things like that and tart it up. And there was a Robust Porter that they were selling. I remember seeing it at BevMo, and I actually got some and tried it. I don't know if they still carry it. It was horrible. It was supposed to be like an English Robust Porter. It was in a, like a green square bottle.
Cool.
Like an old, you know, medicine flask from, you know, the old West days.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, slightly infected and...
Yummy.
Yeah, and it was, I didn't quite enjoy that one. But, you know, you could do a number of things with it. And I think that's one of the beauties.
Would you say that for all dark beers? They're easier to manipulate with other ingredients, spices and adjuncts? And
yeah, I think they hold up better. Mm. You know, you could do, you know, coconut in a dark beer. You can do, you know, spices like, you know, Halloween. You could do like a pumpkin porter. Mm. And, you know, it'll hold up well to the pumpkin spices and a pumpkin character as well. You could do the molasses or treacle treatment to it, and it'll hold up fairly well. You know, so there's a lot of different things you can do to it. The you know, the important thing is getting the base beer dialed in.
Right.
You know, brew that a few times, get it dialed in, get it the way you want it, and then sometimes you can make it a little sweeter if you want to, you know, adjust for something, one thing or the other, and can make a real good beer.
Well, you stress that a lot. Have a good base beer, get that down.
Exactly.
Tweak it later.
Exactly. And... Robust Porter, like you're saying, and dark beers in general, with enough alcohol behind them, will age quite well as well. You can store these away. And I had, you know, some of the very first Robust Porters I ever brewed, I had a few bottles of them, and I was thinking, oh boy, this must be just horrible, and must be, you know, just terribly aged by now. And
how old were they?
At the time, it was, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and
wow.
We pulled those out. I had like a vertical sampling of my Robust Porters over the years, and tasted them side by side, and yeah, they were all in just great shape. Tasted really good, and very enjoyable, and something happens with the roast character. Mm. That's another thing about Robust Porters and all that. If you don't age them a little bit, that roastiness can be a little bit sharp. If you let it get a little age on it, let it sit for a couple of months, that roast will kind of mellow into more chocolate, cocoa, coffee flavors versus being kind of some burnt grain stuffed
right,
in there.
Right.
And that makes a big difference as well.
What, do you want a break, Jamil?
Yeah. I think it's time for a break.
Anybody notice that John sounds like Tone Loc today?
Who's that?
Wild Thing? Funky Cold Medina? How old are you?
26.
Tone Loc was even before your time? You don't know who Tone Loc is? Oh, my God.
Bear with me, man.
Unbelievable.
Right. So if you guys have any questions, get in the chat room, ask them, or you know, dial us up 1-888-401-BEER, and we'll be happy to talk Robust Porters with you. Be back in just a moment.
This is The Jamil Show.
All right, we're back. We're talking about Robust Porters. You can join us in the chat room by clicking the Chat Now button on the website, thebrewingnetwork.com, or you can call us and talk to us direct at 1-888-401-BEER. This is a live show, by the way, all the Brewing Network stuff. And we were talking about Robust Porters, and... one thing we neglected to talk about was fermentation temperature.
How could you?
I don't know. This, your illness is throwing me off today. Maybe it's because I'm trying to sit so far away from you that it's making
it a problem. I still feel close to you.
Yeah, we don't have that. You know, usually when we're rubbing our legs against each other, that gives me a warm feeling.
Good high energy show.
Which helps the energy of the show.
Well, let's talk about our yeast friends.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, the fermentation temperature is going to control attenuation in a way, and also the esters that you're going to get and the alcohols that you're going to get. If you go too warm, it's going to be too estery, too solventy, especially in a beer that's a little higher gravity like this. So with California ale yeast, I'll go 67 to 68, 69 in there Fahrenheit. With an English ale yeast, I go around the same. You can go a little higher than that, and you're going to get a little more attenuation. You're going to get a little little more esters and a little more higher alcohols, which can be a bit of an issue. If you're going to go colder, it's going to not attenuate quite as much. It might end up too sweet, and I wouldn't go much colder than, you know, 67.
Really?
Or so. So about 20 degrees Celsius.
You don't think a Cal Ale can attenuate at a low 60?
It can.
Okay.
But you're going to get slightly less attenuation the colder it gets. It tends to...
Is it stressed out too much? Or?
Well, it tends to be, you know, relative. Hmm. So, and I know some people ferment Cal Ale yeast real cold, but like Chris Graham and I both believe Cal Ale yeast... 65 degrees is pretty much as low as you want to go.
Wow.
You get below that, you have troubles with it, sometimes just dropping out of solution all of a sudden.
Hmm.
And so I tend not to go that any lower than 65 with Cal Ale yeast.
It likes the heat.
Yeah, and it's very clean at 65, and it's very clean at 66, 67, 68. It's not until you get up into the 70s and above that it starts to get a little you know, too solventy or estery.
Zymer just is in the chat room, pretty much agreeing with you, Jamil. He said he likes to pitch right around 60 and let it rise to 65. Says he still gets 75% attenuation.
Okay.
Okay.
That works.
Yeah.
I wonder why he pitches cold.
He just thinks that it's too warm to pitch into and that he gets esters out of it, I suppose.
Huh.
He can call in if he wants to, 888-401-BEER, if you want to talk about that, Zymer just. I'm just reading what he's... talking about with people in the chat room.
I've never heard of pitching cold with an ale yeast. Do you do that too?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I pitch around the fermentation temperature with ale yeast. I don't worry about it like as much as I do with lagers, because you do want some esters in the beer. One of the issues is, we can end up making too clean a beer. And in ales, part of the character of ales is the esters, is the fermentation profile. Just like with lagers, there are some flavors and aromas in a lager beer that are due to the yeast and the fermentation profile, and you want that characteristic too.
Mm-hmm.
So with ales, you do want some esters. And, I would ferment this around, 67, 68. I think you're going to get a better fermentation out of this yeast at that temperature. It's going to be quite clean. You're not really going to pick up a lot of stuff. It's not until you get up into the much higher gravities and higher alcohol that you're going to start to get more of the fusels coming out, or if you get up past 70 degrees. It's a very clean yeast.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of the brew pubs use it. It's very versatile. You can use it in many, many styles. And, one of my favorites.
Zymergist, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going real well. What's up, man?
Well, I just called in because I got asked. I don't know why, but you said something about pitching. And like I said, I like to pitch cold, but it's not so much for the esters. I love esters. It's those higher headache-causing alcohols that I have problems with. I mean, I love headaches as much as anybody, but I want to earn my headache. I mean, I want to drink enough beer and make it up in quantity and not try to do it with quality. I mean, I don't want to do it with, damn fine beer and lots of it rather than, one or two beers that have these, higher alcohols that just, waste your brine.
Yeah, with the California ale yeast, you're not really going to get fusel alcohols until you get up into the 70s.
That is very true, clean. But I don't use the 1056. I like to use the 1968 Y yeast, the ESB yeast.
Oh yeah, well there you're gonna get a lot more.
Yeah, and I get a nice balance of esters, and I don't get to produce all those higher alcohols. I get to produce the right kind of alcohol, that liver killing alcohol, because that liver is an evil organ, it needs to be destroyed.
Get rid of that thing.
Oh, you betcha.
That's
my goal, you know, end this life in this world without a liver.
You gotta have goals, man.
Well, my mother forced me to eat liver when I was a child, and she would soak it in milk, and it looked like these huge leeches, you know, that were in like a bowl of cereal.
So, Jamil, if you were using the Y-Yeast, would you tend to do the same then? Pitch real low and let it warm up a bit, or would 65 still be fine for you?
Yeah, I would make sure I pitch plenty of it.
Mm. Oh, God,
and,
yes.
And I would you know, on the English ale yeast, I'd still go 66, 67 degrees. Mm. And,
well, I let it get to that temperature. I mean, I pitch it at like 60, but I let it naturally go up to 65, 70 in that neighborhood. So it actually does rise up there, but not until after it's past full Croizen, usually.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks, Zymergist.
Hey, not a problem, guys.
Take
you ever
care.
Need any more help or advice or just you know, backwards opinion from a contrarian brewer, let me know.
Great. Thank you very much, sir.
All righty. Hey, you guys take care. It's good hearing you, Jamil.
Great. Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
We always like the backwards opinions. That's why you're here, Jay.
Yeah. I know you do. That's why I get to stay around.
Yeah. Awesome. I thought when you pitched cold, you're not even producing alcohol until Croizen peak. Aren't you just producing CO2?
Yeah, the initial stage is where the yeast is acclimating, and then it starts reproduction and you're getting the replication of the yeast.
Right.
And there is some alcohol production, but
it's more growth phase. So
yeah, and if you're starting out real cold, that can be an issue. You're gonna have a long lag, and you might pick up some unwanted. Again, your beer isn't sterile, and as try as we might, it's not sterile, and there are things in there. So you really do want to out-compete them. You got to be careful.
Right.
One of the things in the lagers, when you get down into the 40s, there, it's you're pretty cold, and the bacteria slow down
right.
considerably, and the lager yeast are still active. Hmm. They're both still active, but there's kind of a different take on it, I think. Hmm. And I think the ester production in lagers is critical. Hmm. So you need to, there. I don't know. Whatever works best for you would be the way to go.
Right.
But my route is you make a starter or get a good slurry, of the right amount, and pitch it in there right at fermentation temperature 60. You might start a couple of degrees down, and once fermentation picks up, if you don't have a way of cooling it.
Right.
Because it'll produce heat, right, and you don't want it to get too hot. So you might chill it down to, 63, 64, something like that.
Right.
Pitch it in, let it warm up, and, as it goes, it'll end up around 70 anyways, or, mid-60s, depending on your ambient temperature. Hmm. But that might be one thing you could do. But other than that, if you have a way of controlling your fermentation temperature, I would just go right at your fermentation temperature and keep it going that way.
Anything about barrel aging before you get out of here, Jamil?
Barrel aging, a lot about barrel aging.
it's a good beer to barrel age.
Yeah, I would brew it a little bit bigger, mm-hmm. Go up to maybe 1070,
whoa.
So you get a little more alcohol in there. And in the barrel, it's going to allow a little oxygen in, which is going to convert those alcohols and have some effect on that. But it's a nice beer for barrel aging, and especially if you want to do like a bourbon barrel beer, you can do stouts and things like that. Robust porter is a nice change up on that.
You could even add oak chips or oak cubes.
Yeah, that's a good way to go. I know people using oak chips and all that, and they soak them in bourbon. But I would just pour the shot of bourbon in. Don't bother.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you soak the wood in bourbon. People do that. I don't see the point of that. I would just put the oak right in the beer. Let it sit to taste it on a regular basis to you get the right amount of oak character that you want.
Yeah.
Then take it out and add bourbon to it. Dose it until you do it in like small cups. measure yourself out 2 ounces of beer.
Mm-hmm.
Get your heroin syringe and measure in the right amount of bourbon until the taste is just how you want it, taste and aroma. Then take, do multiplication, how many ounces you got in your keg, and say, okay, well, now I need, X number of cups of bourbon for the whole keg. Add about 3/4 of that to the keg. Mix it up, taste it. Say, okay, yeah, it's right, I do need the last quarter in there.
Hmm.
And, it's the same way you do fruit beers.
That's interesting. And now you're also altering the alcohol content.
It up as well.
Definitely.
But, that's okay. We're doing homebrew.
Yeah.
And
it would seem to me a different character than taking the bourbon flavor that would be in the wood.
In a barrel, yes.
As opposed to actually adding bourbon.
Right.
So you are really changing. It's two different things.
But, the bourbon character in the barrel and, those barrels, they have, a few cups of bourbon in them.
Yeah.
When you get them, there's like a half gallon of bourbon.
No kid.
Great.
I got 2 Jim Beam barrels, and there's like a half gallon of bourbon in those things.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
$20 for a barrel, half gallon Jim Beam comes with it.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty good. And and there are some difference to it, but the nice thing about this is if you can get yourself a Jim Beam barrel and you can produce 55 gallons of beer to put in the thing.
Hmm.
It's great. It's a great way to do it, and I've done that, and it works out really nice. If you can't do that and you're working with oak cubes and all that, soaking them in bourbon is not going to give you the same bourbon character. What you can do if you want, if you want to avoid the extra alcohol of the bourbon, is just heat your bourbon up in a saucepan on the stove. And you throw your oak cubes in there at the same time if you want. And just heat it up to about, what's the temperature for alcohol? 150-something, 170. Heat it up to like 170, and that'll pasteurize the oak cubes, and it'll drive off the alcohol in the bourbon, and you'll just be left with the bourbon flavor pretty much.
Okay.
And you can try that as well, and that should work fairly well.
Yeah, less time aging, too.
What was the beer that we tried at Anderson Valley that Firestone had? Remember that? Was that a stout that was on bourbon?
I don't remember.
You drank a lot of beer that day.
I didn't until that night.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I don't think I had it. I don't think I had it with you at that. I don't think I had anything from Firestone.
Yeah, you specifically talked about it. That's awesome. Either way, I remember it was really good.
I had four.
The blackout periods are getting longer.
Well, I had all of about 4 samples at the entire festival. It wasn't until camping at night that I had anything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was good.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Very strange. They must have been strong samples, those 4.
Those 4 1-gallon samples.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
I don't know what was in it.
What's next time, Jamil?
All right, so our next show is going to be Classic American Pilsner, CAP. And it's a great style. You can brew it and have it ready for 4th of July. It is not your father's Budweiser or whatever. This is how they brewed lager beers back in the day, and it's a pretty impressive beer. I think you'll like it. Coming up next is a repeat of the very first Brewcast on the Brewing Network. Lots of fun to listen to and see how far we've come. And tomorrow at 10 is the Oz Craft Brewer Show, one of my favorites. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
The Jamil Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jamil to jamil@thebrewingnetwork.com. The Jamil Show airs live every other Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Brewing Network.